Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our Morning Talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening, and we're glad to have back on the program once again Sandy Mason. She is an extension educator in horticulture with U of I Extension, and now responsible for the counties of Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, and Vermilion. And she's been doing the show with us for a very long time, stopping by here on a regular basis once a month to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So here's the deal. If you have questions about, some problem that you've had, you know, it may be that there's still something that was a problem from the last growing season and you never really got it solved and you need to get some advice, you can call. You are thinking about the things that are happening out there right now that need some attention. Maybe you're thinking about things that you would like to plant this year, or maybe you have some spot in your yard that needs something, but you're not quite sure what. Any and all of that, we can do houseplant questions as well. Any and all of that is certainly welcome. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Emails, well, you can do that too. If you'd like to write, the address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Any point here, you give us a call and you can talk to Sandy. Hey, thank you very much.
Good morning.
For being here. So things continue to be just totally wacky.
Yes, I'm glad.
One day it's 80, and then the next day we're having a frost, which is sort of typical for this time of year, but these swings, yeah, are pretty unusual.
And I just think that the fact that so many of the plants are farther ahead than they normally,
yes,
would be,
yes,
and things have bloomed a lot earlier than they normally would have been. So it's really that. There's a lot of guesswork going on right now because none of us have really remembered anything quite like this before. I certainly remember times when we've had a semi-warm March or whatever, and then it got cooler again, but nothing quite like this.
Yeah. We have in our front yard, we have a little dogwood, and I don't ever remember seeing so many flowers on that tree, mm-hmm, as we have now, but I'm also kind of a little worried because we are, I think the forecast is for it to get down below freezing, I think, tonight, maybe tomorrow night. And that's not actually the first time it's happened in the last couple of weeks. So I'm worried, not that there's anything I can do about it, but yeah, I'm kind of wondering, yeah, about how that's going to affect the flowers on the tree.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing, and that is the comment I've heard from a number of people, like the red buds, actually a lot of the flowering trees have never had so many, yeah, flowers on them. Yeah. And I even had a few people say that even some shrubs that they typically wouldn't have seen a lot of flowers on. I don't know if you know Japanese caria. It's kind of a nice little shrub that has yellow flowers on it. And I've heard several people say that theirs have never had as many flowers. So that just shows, you know, it was fairly warm winter, so a lot of flower buds were not killed off. So that part's good. We've seen a lot of good flowering on things. I think the one thing with a lot of the flowering, whether it's lilacs or dogwoods, like as you were mentioning, a lot of those will tolerate, you know, right around freezing. You know, that's fine. If it gets to 32, even 31, they'll probably be just fine and the flowers will do well. It's when we start getting lower than that, it's when we start getting into the 20s, that's when you probably would actually see just the death of the petals all together, and then that would be the end of the flowering. But probably, I'm guessing, it sounds like we're still sort of hovering around that freezing mark, so I think we're going to be okay with a lot of the flowers. But if people are concerned, it's one of those things, take a lot of pictures. I don't know.
That's sad.
Cut a few, take them indoors. You know, for some of these things where you can't really cover if they're particularly big, if there are some things that people feel like they want to cover, they certainly could. But I imagine, you know, just even looking after that one frost that we had a different frost where I was because I saw it on the grass. And it, for a lot of the things, they were still fine. My lilacs still looked good. Even my rhubarb was not. I know people worry about rhubarb being frosted because you're not supposed to eat it after it freezes. It was fine. The leaves looked perfectly healthy. Even irises, I had some irises blooming. They looked fine. And that was right at that 32, kind of right at hovering at that. So I think that temperature is fine. It's when we get lower than that. And then plus the fact the wind, and I saw more damage yesterday from the wind than really from the cold weather because they're so delicate. The flowers are delicate. The new leaves are delicate. They haven't hardened off yet. And I saw a lot of damage on trees and on flowers and stuff just from being beaten up by the wind. So we may see some of that going on too.
Okay. Well, in any case, questions here, welcome. You'd like to talk to Sandy, 333-9455. toll-free, 800-222-9455. Also, you can send us email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, what right now, are there some particular things that you say people really should be doing? Particularly now, you know, we do often get really nice days. Sunday was a very nice day, so if you wanted to be outside, I should have, but I didn't. I was feeling particularly lazy, so it's such a nice day. So what kind of things should we be thinking about?
Well, I think one of the things, certainly if you're redoing a lawn, you know, April's generally a good month to be thinking about seeding lawns. So this is a really good time to do that, if you want to do that. Hopefully we could start getting into some rain. That would help immensely. It is one of those things that if we haven't had, and for most of our areas, we just haven't had a decent rain here for a while. If you had new plantings from last year, or maybe you've already planted something this year, just to water, though. And I know we're not used to having to water things in April, but make sure you do water things. That's particularly important. I think the other thing is, if you have issues with certain pests, whether it's bagworms or scale or whatever, realize that a lot of that timing is going to be sooner than it normally would be. So you realize that if you're always planning on, you know, maybe spraying for pine needle scale in May, it's going to be earlier this year because of the fact that it's been so warm so early that even the insects are going to start coming out earlier, and we've seen that already. Yeah. So that's the other thing. It's just sort of keep in mind and really start looking around to see kind of where things are in your yard.
Yeah, I was informed by one of my neighbors recently that I had a tree in my front yard that had bagworms on it, and I had to be honest and say I didn't know what that was. I really never dealt with it before. And the thing is that it's a pine tree, and the bagworms look like something that could actually grow on the tree. I mean, you don't look at it and think this is an insect. So this was a very tall tree, and I got out my ladder and I went around and I picked off as many as I could possibly reach. Well, I did my best. But I kind of wonder about that, because actually the upper part of the tree looks really bad, and I guess I had thought that mostly it was because last summer was so hot and dry. Maybe that, in fact, it was the bagworms that killed off the top part of the tree. I don't know.
Yeah. And so bagworms are certainly one of those things. And because when they make the bags, they actually put the needles of whatever they're eating, they put it on the bag. And so it's a great camouflage.
Oh, yeah.
No wonder you don't notice it.
Perfect
camouflage.
Yeah.
So this time of year, the only thing to do is pick them off. I mean, you were doing exactly what you needed to do this time of year. As we get later into the season here, typically we'd probably be spraying for bagworms maybe the end of June, 1st of July with our second spray. This year we're going to see it earlier, I suspect. And it usually, that was one of the things that I kind of pulled out, was one of the books that I hadn't looked at actually for a while. And it's actually a book called Coincide. And it was a gentleman that actually looked at when other things are blooming and when insects are emerging, and sort of correlated the two. And so one of his comments was, look for catalpa to bloom. That's when you're going to need to spray for your bagworms. So catalpa trees, the big catalpa trees, or if you have privet, which is a common shrub, when those are in full bloom, that's the time to spray for bagworms. So I suspect it's going to be more like mid-June when we start to see emergence from bagworms. Again, I'm just guessing at this point. We'll know, you know, once we get into May, we'll know a lot more than that.
But. Okay, can you call me?
Yeah, sure. On a Sunday, I'll call you and make sure you get out.
Dave.
Start spraying.
Bagworms.
Hey, time spray.
Okay. We have some callers here. Let's talk with them. Line one is first in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I have a comment, not a question. One thing you haven't mentioned is bees, and I have a friend who's an avid beekeeper, and one of the farmers where she has her hives told her that his peach trees bloom too early, and they're not going to be pollinated because there were no bees out yet. So that's another problem.
Actually, my bees
early.
Were out. My bees were out for the. Yeah, certainly the timing is an issue. Certainly the bees were out for peaches maybe a little bit early, but when it's warm, the bees will come out. And it was warm when peaches were blooming, so there certainly should have been some activity out there. But certainly, I know they've been pretty active with the apples blooming and the cherries. But that is an odd thing for pollinators, and you think there's plenty of food out there, and even they may not have enough food at the right time. So,
right.
But good point.
And if you were, what would it be safe now to plant outside?
The only things I've planted are things that I know are frost tolerant. So broccoli, I have broccoli out. I have lettuce, spinach. You know, all the leafy stuff can tolerate frost just fine.
Uh-huh.
And really, most of the cold crops, so things like broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and those kind of things, will tolerate those cold temperatures just fine. Potatoes. Onions, a lot of things like that are just fine with these
okay.
cooler temperatures. As far as flowers, I'm still sort of sticking with pansies, something that are frost tolerant. So pansies stock is another plant, another annual that's frost tolerant. We're getting to the point where probably you might be able to get away with something like petunias, where it'll take a little bit of a frost or a little cooler temperature, and they're fine. But we're still at that point where, you know, we still have plenty of opportunities for it to get cold. So I haven't really jumped the gun too much.
I have a young cherry tree that's that one that was developed in Alberta, I think, to tolerate 30 degrees or 40 degrees below zero. It grows from the root so that, you know, cold weather isn't going to kill it. And it's the third year, and it's supposed to bear a little bit, and I see, you know, maybe half a dozen blooms on it, but it's already bloomed. So is that going to be safe now? Because I don't think it's going to get any more blooms.
No, it should be fine, especially if it's rated to something that low. But usually, you know, it's one of those things that you know, a lot of times the plant is perfectly winter hardy, but then it's those flowers that we always have issues,
right.
Whether it's apricots or peaches or whatever. Those are usually ones that get hit. But usually when they're full flower, that's when they're most sensitive. And then as they go ahead and start to develop fruit, then they get a little less sensitive to cold temperatures. So it's kind of a gradient and so they get less, it ends up being less of a problem for them when the cold temperatures come. So you should be fine,
so think,
I guess is what I'm getting at.
If they've already bloomed, it shouldn't
yes.
be a problem.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I think they're past that really critical stage.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping.
Right.
Okay,
so that's the
you.
Good news.
All right, very good. Let's go on to another caller. This is Philo, and it's line number 2. Hello.
Hi.
Hi,
Sandy.
Hi.
I have a question that I could look up in my Master Gardener manual, but I'd rather talk to you. It's about pruning, and I know, you know, the spring flowering, I have to wait until after they're blooming. But I have plants I've neglected for this past year, or this last season. And I have a real tall red twig dogwood mm-hmm. that's all blooming on the top, you know, and it's mm-hmm. all twigs. Mm-hmm. They're not dead twigs, but they're, you know, they're nice and vibrant, but it's top blooming. Same with azaleas. They were really sparse, and they were just kind of blooming on the top. Well, I went ahead and cut back the azaleas so that it's just like green stem because I want it to be more blooming on the bottom. So I guess my question is for azaleas that have already bloomed, hydrangeas and the Annabelle and the red twig, can I go back and hard prune them and still get some blooms this year?
Well, the red twig dogwoods are blooming right now.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know. I mean the actual bloom.
Right.
And, it was a summer. It's a spring flowering.
Right. They're in bloom right now.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Which is fine. You know, and it's not that dramatic of a flower, so probably people wouldn't even notice it too much if they're in flower or not in flower, because people don't really, they look for the red twig. So I would say absolutely, go ahead and do a hard prune on the red twig dogwoods. They actually look much better if you can prune them hard, like every fourth year or so. Just give them a real hard prune.
It's been a while. Yeah, they really looked nice a while back when I did that, but I didn't know.
Yep, they look so much better. And it's not too late. I think it's one of those things, if we don't get in, for anything that we're going to do a hard prune like that, if we don't start getting into some rain here, I might go ahead and water it so it recovers quickly. And then those Annabelle hydrangeas, they bloom on new wood, so new growth that comes out, so you can actually prune those this time of year as well. Azaleas, we probably typically don't do a ton of pruning on those because sometimes it's a little bit harder just to make sure that they're going to go ahead and bud out for you. They're not quite as, so I wouldn't be quite as dramatic on them, although it sounds like maybe you already have.
Well, I did for some smaller ones because they were, maybe they were planted at the wrong spot.
Oh, okay.
Because they were just having a few blooms on the top. And the same, I've had these really not old, well, they're probably 15 years old, rhododendrons that are all, you know, it's just top blooming.
Right.
And I wanted them to be rich and full. And I haven't touched the rhodos because they're big and older.
Right.
But But what do you do when that happens? Can you hard prune those back after they flower, and do they ever come back, or do you just replace them?
Yeah, I have, now from what I've seen on rhododendrons, and I know some people have told me that you can go ahead and do a hard prune on rhododendrons, but pretty much all I've ever seen is the fact that you can just do a soft prune. You know, after they flower, then they'll send up those new shoots, and you can actually prune that back. But I've never seen, and maybe somebody can call in that's really done a hard prune. I know in some areas of the country where they grow really well, they can get away with that. I just don't know if we can here or not. So maybe somebody can let me know.
Okay, well, I won't do anything too drastic with
you. Yeah, or you may want to try it, and then you can just let me know. But, you know, azaleas and rhododendrons, as you know, need that acidic soil, so our soils aren't quite right for them. Yeah. So generally they don't grow quite as lush as they typically would.
There's one place in Champaign that some lady has them against in her north-facing yard, and they're all year round, they're just so lush.
Yeah.
I don't know, because they're hardening the house, if that helps.
Probably. Kind of that little different, yeah. Probably a little bit more protected, but yet. And perhaps she's watering, those kind of things are going to make a big difference on those, too. So. Yeah.
Thank you
Good luck.
Bye-bye. Well,
thank you. To a cell phone in Watsika, line number 4. Hello?
Yeah, hi, David. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a comment, actually, two quick questions for your guests. We live in a rural community. And I talked to a number of farmers, and almost to the farmer, they're calling for a drought this summer. Some of the comments were, well, because of the lack of snow, there's not a lot of nitrogen in the ground. And I just, you know, would be curious if your guest put any volition in that statement, or it's probably too early to tell. But it is, it's interesting, the unanimity of the statements. Everyone seems to think we're going to have a drought this summer, so I don't know if there's any volition in that. But my question is, I have a line of bushes, and I've been reluctant to spray them because I don't want to hurt them, but they're being overtaken by a vine. Somebody told me, and I probably am going to destroy the name, it's Kuzo or something. It's just really spreading fast, and in the fall it leaves a pod of seeds, and it's really choking the bushes. And I was just wondering, is there anything that I could spray in particular that would just kill these vine weeds? And my second question is, I planted 3 weeping willows, and they are called Wisconsin weeping willows. And I'm not familiar with that type of tree, and I was wondering if there are any things unique to that type of weeping willow. And I'll go ahead and listen offline. Thanks.
Okay. So several questions in there, sounds like. Is the weeping willow, since you ended with that, I don't know about the Wisconsin weeping willow. There's lots of hybrids within willows right now, as well as there certainly can be many cultivars. So I really can't speak to that one in particular. Generally, willows are very fast growing, and they have a lot of good things going for them. They can have some insect and disease issues. And willows tend to be one of those, and it sounds like maybe you already planted them. They tend to be one of those that lose a lot of twigs after windstorms and stuff. So generally they're kind of nice in the back 40 next to the pond, maybe not, you know, up close next to the house where you're going to have concerns maybe about little twigs falling and stuff. So I think those would be the few comments. But they're pretty tough plants. You can't hardly kill them for the most part with willows. The other question was about the...
Some kind of viney binding thing. Weed that's invading a plant that... Something he doesn't want that's invading a plant that he does want.
I guess I would be surprised if it's kudzu.
Yeah.
Certainly... Kudzu has been found in Illinois and certainly even, you know, in northern part. It's typically a southern weed, but it has been found in Illinois as far north as Peoria, I think. So it certainly has been tolerant of our colder temperatures. I would wonder if that's what it is, though, because that would be less likely. At any rate, it sounds like it was a woody vine, and I think probably what I would do is that if it's indeed a woody vine, you can actually cut the vine, and then you can actually use a herbicide, usually for like a brush control, any of those kind of products. And if you read the label, they're labeled as a cut surface treatment, is what it'll say, cut surface treatment. And then once you cut it, you actually go ahead and just paint it on right to that cut surface. plants immediately. And actually, that's a very good technique for a lot of, you know, weedy things, especially if they're woody like that. So you're not spraying the whole plant. You're just cutting them off and then going ahead and doing that. And that should be fairly effective on whatever this vine happens to be. I'd be really interested to know if it truly is kudzu, because I'm not sure of it being in Watsika area. So that one's a little different. As far as the drought, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm not a climatologist by any means, but being a gardener, I certainly know that generally that's when we make up most of our rainfall is in the spring, is now, and we're not getting that. And that would be our typical cycle, would be to have a wet spring. And we're not having that now. So I'm concerned about it as in what the year is going to bring. But you'd really have to talk to a climatologist to see if they have any theories beyond that. So I'm certainly concerned about being particularly dry right now. As far as nitrogen in the soil, it's probably kind of going back to the way farmers actually apply nitrogen. And when we have warm soil temperatures, they tend to lose more of that nitrogen that's within the soil. And it's not typically probably the same process that we use within gardening and landscaping and stuff. But that certainly is an issue for farmers at this point because of the high soil temperatures and the loss of nitrogen. So that's certainly an issue for them. Yeah. But I know I wish we would get into some rains here. It makes me very nervous not to have April showers. So,
well, it's been, I don't know that we really had a lot of moisture over the winter time. And last year, July and August were pretty dry. So it's, we've been in a pretty dry period now for quite a while.
Right. And I think, if I remember correctly, I think this Thursday is when they make the determination on whether we're truly in a drought situation. So I think it was coming up soon. I thought that they were actually going to make some determinations on whether we were truly at that state or not. But maybe we can get into some rain here soon, but keep our fingers crossed. But
yeah, okay. Well, I got an email from someone that includes some photos. Let me work on this, because
it looks like a cat on a rope.
It looks like, yeah. Well,
I don't know what that is.
Let's see if I can get one that a little bit better. If you'd like to talk with our guest, Sandy Mason, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Okay, so here's the deal. The person says, these are pictures of an apple tree that we planted with two others 2 years ago. This spring, they all started blooming just fine and then leafing out, but the middle one turned brownish orange as the pictures show, and as the leaves hardly made it out, the other two leafed out just fine. What could be the issue? I thought that 2 years would be past the possibility of drying them out. They are different varieties. This particular one was a Golden Delicious. And they say, I just don't want to plant another tree if there is a blight issue or something like that. Now, I think this picture is a little, that seems to be a little bit more clear. I don't know. What do you think about that? I can see what.
Well, it almost looks like the petals have just been damaged. That typically wouldn't be the color of, you know, typically with apple blossoms, we're looking at white to pink kind of coloration, usually pink on the outside, white on the inside kind of thing. And so usually we see the colorations of white to pink. This one's definitely looking that kind of rusty kind of color to it. I wouldn't think of a particular disease or anything at this point that I would think about that would look like that. It just looks more like a physical damage, whether they dried out or wind or something else that just physically damaged the petals at this point. So I'm not sure that it's anything infectious. I guess that's kind of the bottom line. But with kind of looking at those pictures, that's probably about as far as I can get. Certainly people can take, you know, samples to their local extension office. They can send things to the University of Illinois Plant Clinic. So if it's really something they want to go farther with that, sometimes we actually need to see the actual plant before we can go much farther. But it's nothing that I've typically seen.
Okay. And so there would be nothing in particular you would suggest other than routine care for the tree, make sure that it gets watered well.
Absolutely.
Enough. And other than that, you just sort of cross your fingers and see how you do.
Because it looks like the central portion of the flower, the actual, you know, male, female parts that are end up going to make the fruit actually still look good to me from this point. It just looks like a petal issue.
So the sort of the browning on the petals does really seem to be on the very edges
of
the petal.
Right. Which would almost indicate more like a physical damage of some sort from wind, drought, something has created an issue for it.
Well, and as Sandy says, that one of the things that you can do if you have plant questions is there are plant clinics, and there are places where you can take you need to bring in a sample so that they can actually then look at it and see what it is. So first of all, they know what plant it is, and then they can see what the problem is, and then they can give you a better diagnosis than we could do over the phone, or we could even do with a photograph like this. So, people in Champaign-Urbana, where would they go?
Well, in Champaign-Urbana, they can actually take it to the U of I Extension. Our office is actually 801 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign, and our number is 217-333-7672. And the U of I Plant Clinic is at Turner Hall now. They've actually moved. They're not at St. Mary's Road anymore. They're actually at Turner Hall, and they can take samples there on the University of Illinois campus. And I'm sure if they just Google the U of I Plant Clinic, they can find good directions on how to get there and how to bring in samples and all that good stuff.
Okay. And we will talk with another caller here. Caller is in Belgium on our line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you both. Mm-hmm. One a comment and second a question. The first comment is you had a caller earlier talking about peaches and blooming and bees and stuff. I have a small little orchard that you're aware of, and I have probably about 15, 20 trees, maybe something like that. They bloomed out better than they've ever bloomed out, just fabulously. And there were a lot of insect activity. I saw some bees, but not a whole lot. And I've noticed now that the blooms have fallen off, it's the amount that was pollinated forming the small little peaches is much less than I would have expected with as many blooms as I had. They didn't seem to do as good a job of pollinating. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe they were there, but maybe they were just lazy. I don't know.
Lazy bees.
Or something. And they weren't all bees either. There were lots of other pollinators that come around too. And I noticed there were lots and lots of insects around them, but I just don't know if they did as good a job as they're supposed to. I have to agree with the person.
Yeah, that's certainly be an issue. But, the other part is we really don't want all the flowers to develop.
Well, that's true.
That's the other part of this. If truly every single flower developed on your peaches and apples and stuff, you'd have tiny, tiny little apples because there's just no way that you'd end up with any decent-sized apples. So a lot of times they have to be thinned anyway just because there's too many. So we don't want, total pollination anyway. But, yeah, that's interesting. So maybe weather conditions weren't quite right, or maybe, the other part is because when it's real dry and warm like that, of course, the pollen is going to be shed much faster, and so they don't have that time period where, they might have had, several days to actually, where the pollen is still viable and they can still pollinate, whereas when you get those really dry higher temperatures, then that, the pollen can actually degrade much faster. So there's some of that going on, too, I think, because it was so warm. That's the other big issue.
The actual question I have for you, though, is the last couple of 3 years, I've been trying to plant a few potatoes in my garden. Not a whole lot. I'm not trying to make money out of it. Just plant a few potatoes. And the first year, I planted my potatoes, and I planted them in a hill, I guess you call it, and put a few potatoes in there. And as they came up, I covered them up a little bit more. And as they came up, I covered them up a little bit more, and going taller and taller. And I got a few potatoes, nothing spectacular. And the next time, I said, well, that must not have worked right. So I plant them in a row. And tried to take care of them and do them as best I could and weed around them and everything. And I got almost no potatoes that way. Is it my ground? Is it me? Or am I doing it wrong?
So when did you plant them?
Oh, about this time of year. I try to plant them about Good Friday, That's what I've heard.
Okay. Because the one thing with potatoes is if they have really, the tubers are actually formed at temperatures usually around 70 or so. So if temperatures, if the soil temperatures get above 80, they don't form tubers. So sometimes it's those high soil temperatures can make a big difference. That's why you need to get them in the ground as soon as you can. And so usually, mid-March or March is an excellent time to plant potatoes because then they get up and going and they're doing their thing before we get into really high soil temperatures. So the whole idea of using straw and stuff actually kind of helps to keep those soil temperatures cooler. So I wonder if that isn't going on.
Well, I think my biggest problem is what you just mentioned. I don't plant them early enough.
Yeah, you really need to plant them in March. And depending on, of course, when Easter is and when Good Friday. So you may find that you'd be better off maybe planting them. Usually, I always say you need to get your potatoes in by St. Patrick's Day.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Then that's the
and
problem,
that always stays the same. So, you know, that's the one that doesn't change. So if you can get it in before mid-March, that'll help. So I have a feeling that's probably what's going on. It's just planting a little bit too late. So,
too late.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh,
all right, thank you. We're talking this morning about things that grow in the home landscape. We do it every month with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the second hour today, we will talk with Martin Marty. He's professor emeritus of the history of modern Christianity at University of Chicago, very well known for writing about religion in America. He'll be here on the campus later in the week to give a talk. He'll be joining us by phone, talking about the issue of religion and politics, religion in the public square, how people think about how to put their religious beliefs into practice. More on that in the second part of the show. Tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, it's our monthly show on nutrition. Celeste Quinn will host. Susan Kundrat will be the guest. She's a registered dietitian, so questions that you have about food and its effect on us will be welcome. And then also tomorrow, I will talk with Josefina Lopez. She's a playwright, screenwriter, author, performer. She wrote the highly acclaimed play and film Real Women Have Curves. And she's also written for TV and cable networks and has written feature film scripts for some big movie studios. She is visiting the campus as artist in residence and will be talking with us. I do want to mention that, in fact, that there will be a screening of the movie Real Women Have Curves tonight on the U of I campus. And this is happening at the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory. There'll be a Q&A after the film. And if you're interested in seeing it or perhaps hearing from her and finding out what she has to say about the movie and about making movies, you can certainly go to that tonight, 7 o'clock at Spurlock, and then she'll be with us tomorrow morning. You can check our schedule by going to the website, 333. That's the phone number. The website is WILL. Time for me to retire. WILL.illinois.edu. And the schedule is there, and you can also listen to past programs. In this hour, the guest is Sandy Mason. She's an extension educator in horticulture with Extension, U of I Extension, Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, Vermilion counties. And if you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape, call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I was thinking about, I was in one of the big box stores the other day and did walk through the garden center, and they actually did have some plants there, and I saw some really nice, I think that they were pansies, and I thought, well, no, those are really pretty. And it was, for a little minute, I thought, you know, I could get some of those and put them in some containers, sure, and stick them out in the front of the house, and it would be really nice. And then the mood passed. So I just went in and got what
I was there for.
I know. It was part of the general laziness that was affecting me at the time.
Affliction.
Yeah. But so it would be something like that would be, as long as you have something that you're really sure that can take the cold. If we do have a cold snap, you say, it's okay.
Yeah, pansies are tough, and they actually like this cooler. They like the cooler temperatures, certainly the temperatures we're having today and stuff they love. So having those cooler temperatures, they love. And they'll actually last a long time. So, well, even though they're a cool season crop, they'll still go into even once it gets warmer and stuff. And I don't think there's anything cheerier than a bunch of pansies, for sure.
Yeah,
so
they're really pretty.
So those are really good ones to plant.
Okay. Champaign. Here we'll talk with somebody in Champaign. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
Hey, yeah. So I'm expanding my vegetable garden in my backyard. And so I took out a flower bed, and we had such nice weather earlier. I tilted it all up, and boy, it was just, you know, nice and crumbly and perfect. And so anyway, along comes my cat, and I've been noticing that my cat has decided that that's the best litter box ever. It's real big and just perfect. So I'm questioning what issues I'll face having that situation, a cat that's, pooping in that area,
yeah,
and I want to grow tomatoes. So.
Yeah, it's probably not so much, you know, it obviously is one of those things we always worry about. Any kind of mammal feces like that is always an issue, because there certainly are some diseases and things that can certainly be transferred to humans. So it would be one of those things that if you can, you know, even though she thinks it's the perfect litter box, if, you know, to actually remove that and put it somewhere, you know, I don't know when she does it. So that would be good. It's probably a bigger issue, I would say, for things like the, if you were going to growing any root crops, things that are actually growing in the soil, so carrots and beets and things like that, they're growing in the soil, that would certainly be an issue. Or leafy crops where, you know, they're really close to the soil surface and any splashing. And again, we're being super cautious here. For things like tomatoes, maybe not so much. But I will say once you get probably your crop in to the point where then you mulch, she may not find it quite as attractive. She probably still will go out there, but she may not find it quite as attractive once you put mulch over the top. If all else fails and you just really feel like this is just not going to work, you can actually put like chicken wire in certain spots where she seems to always go, and then underneath the mulch, and then they can't, you know, they aren't going to have it find it so attractive to go ahead and use it as their little personal litter box, giant litter box. She said, "Thanks, Dad."
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what sort of things I'd be cautious about? I just got to wondering what sort of things can go from something way down there in the soil into a fruit like a tomato.
Well, I think it's not that so much that they're taking it in, it's any of that surface, you know, anything that might get on the surface. So obviously, you know, washing any vegetables and stuff, those kind of things. It's more of a surface. Sorry, I guess I wasn't very clear on that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's surface contamination is really what we would worry about. So it's anything, if you were using like manure or whatever, it's that surface contamination that's going to be an issue.
Okay.
So just making sure that you wash things properly. And then, of course, anything that's closer to the soil is going to be more of an issue. And you'd really need to make sure you wash it.
It's not like the roots are taking up.
No. Sorry. I wasn't clear on that.
Yeah.
No. That's not an issue. So the plant's not going to be taking it up. Actually, the plant's probably perfectly happy to have a little fertilizer next to it. It's probably just perfectly fine. But no. It's
great.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Okay, very good. To another caller here. This is line two. Hello.
Hi. Is it okay to water my plants outside when it's this cold?
I would definitely go ahead and water them in the sense that you just don't want things to be wilted. You know, I'm not sure I'd worry about. I know sometimes people think they need to water in the evening right before it gets cold, but so I wouldn't do that. But now when the sun's shining and they need to be watered, I would water them.
Okay.
But then hopefully they're dry going into evening.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thanks. So that issue about something going to bed damp for the plants, it's as much an issue now when it's cold as it would be when it was really warm.
It's still not a good idea anyway, shape or form, because you really don't want water on the foliage that might also crystallize. So that's like one more thing that would be an issue for them. But you don't want plants to be wilted, because then they're already under stress. And then if they would go through a cold period, then it might even be harder for them to recover. So you don't want them to be stressed. So no stress.
No stress. Speak nicely to them. Tell them how pretty they are. No stress.
Yeah, no stress.
About 10, 12 minutes left in this part of the show with Sandy. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. will-talk@illinois.edu. That's the email. So let's talk a little bit more about lawn care. So we are at the time now, if you're going to do weed control fertilizing, now it's okay to do it.
Yeah, we're really pretty much at that point. You know, typically we'd probably say on fertilization, we usually say to wait. You know, the University of Illinois usually says to wait until the 1st of May or so. But now the grass is just so much farther along than it typically would be in April. Then I think it's fine to go ahead and do that if you want to do your first fertilizer application. I think that's fine. If you have weed issues, you might want to go ahead and deal with that now as well. Certainly dandelions are blooming. Although I must admit, Easter Sunday, we all went walking, and the kids had so much fun playing with the dandelions and, you know, blowing the seed pods and stuff.
Distributing the seeds
to all the neighbors. But I just thought it was just like, what a fun thing to do in a kid is sort of playing with these dandelion seed heads. That was such a fun thing. So, I don't know. So that's a little...
You're just telling
them,
and when you grow up, and when
you
have a lawn,
then you'll hate them. I know. I should have told them that. Now you girls enjoy them now, because someday
Aunt Sandy,
you're going to hate them.
You're no fun at all. All right. Next up is Sullivan, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Question about blue spruce trees.
Uh-huh.
My blue spruce tree started dropping needles in the summertime from the bottom up, and it just gradually progresses upward on the tree. And then I've noticed the same thing in blue spruce trees around this area. So is there some kind of new disease or something affecting them?
Well, you know, blue spruce have really taken a hit over the last few years, and there's certainly can be a number of things going on. And I think the first thing you always want to think, you know, make sure they're not planted too deep. We've certainly seen issues there where, you know, they shouldn't be going into the ground like a telephone pole. So I don't know, you know, how if you planted these or someone else planted them. But so there's sometimes environmental conditions that can make it so that they just don't do well here. Probably the other part is we are seeing a disease, a leaf disease called Rhizosphera needle blight. And it is a fungal disease. And it is one of those that kind of sounds like what you're talking about, where you tend to have these second year needles tend to turn brown, kind of almost a purplish brown. They fall off and it seems to progress up the tree. So that certainly could be one of the things that's going on with it. Unfortunately, it's one of those, it's a fungal disease. It could be, if it's caught early enough, it can be, you can use a fungicide on them. But I will tell you, if the tree, if a lot of the tree is already affected, it's really hard to turn it around. And it is one of those things that actually you'd be spraying now. You spray when the needles are half grown, which is about what they are right now. And then you spray again when they're full grown, which is about 10 to 14 days later. Then you do a second spray. And it, what you're trying to do is protect the new needles against infection. The old needles are still infected. So they'll go ahead and fall off. You're trying to protect the new needles. And I will tell you that fungicide spray program is going to have to be done for at least the next 3 years to make sure that you've got it under control, because you're trying to, again, sort of prevent infection. So it's one of those things you kind of have to decide, well, is this still, you know, is it still a nice looking tree? If I am I willing to commit for the next few years to go ahead and get it sprayed? Can I do that? So you kind of have to think through, does this all make sense to go ahead and do that? Is it a tree I can spray? Because if it's particularly large, that gets to be an issue too. So probably the best thing would be either to bring in samples to your local extension office or take samples to the plant clinic, find out for sure if that's really what the disease is. But my guess is that's probably what's going on.
Well, these are 20, these are, you know, 30-year-old trees that are right. 20, 25 feet tall and in a windbreak, and there's 50 of them probably.
Oh, wow. So it's yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think some of them might be salvageable, but some of them are almost gone all the way to the top. So
then those you might want to just get out of there, because if they're there, they're a source of infection for the other trees. So if they're really to the point where they're looking bad, I'd get them out of there, and I'd get them out of there as soon as you can. And then try to clean up as best you can, because that fungus, unfortunately, will hang out on the needles. And so it's really a tough disease to get under control. I think the other thing is that, you know, for the most part, you know, this is the land of prairie and not of spruce forest. So these are not plants that are native to our area. So they don't really like our hot summers. They don't like a drought period. So there's a lot of things going on with them that they don't particularly like. And that always makes them more susceptible to these disease issues.
Yeah. So, well, they're great. Up until about 4 or 5 years.
I know. So they're beautiful. You're right.
Yeah.
They really
the
have.
The Norway spruces aren't really effective, so I guess I'll probably replace blues with those.
And I will tell you, that is another, Rhizosphera tends to be less of a problem with Norway spruces. So that's another indicator that might mean that that's what's going on with them. Good luck. It's a tough problem.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. To Champagne for the next caller, line number 2. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I heard your comment about watering plants with in this cold weather. I put down some grass seed hoping that it would rain. It did not. How about watering, continuing to water grass seeds in the cold weather like this?
Well, I'd go ahead and water it, because you don't want the seed to dry out.
Right.
I would certainly go ahead and do that. And again, it would probably be one of those things, if you can do it like now or early enough in the day so that it's not wet, you know, super wet going into the evening, that would be great.
Okay. I'll do that.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
All right. Very good. And to Urbana for our next caller. This would be line number 3. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have 3 trees in my yard that I was hoping to get some advice on pruning them. I have a magnolia that I was hoping to take some of the lower branches off of. I have a dogwood that just sort of needs some general pruning. And I have a birch, which has one sort of very long branch that's extending out horizontally, and I'm concerned that if we have a big storm, it might sort of come down and damage the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sort of tried to look for advice, and it seems like whenever I find one piece of advice, I find another piece that contradicts it or says, well, there may be exceptions. So I was just hoping to sort of, you know, get clear on when should I be, you know, pruning the flowering trees, for example. Do I do it now or in the winter? And do we have any sort of pests that may impact when I prune the birch or anything else you have to offer?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with the plants that you're talking about, it's fine. And generally with, especially like magnolias and stuff, generally we like to see them flower, and they did, and then to prune them after flowering. Okay. So it kind of, you know, if it's one of those things that I think, you know, sometimes people want to do it in the dormant season, and that's fine, but then you'd be taking off the flower buds when it comes to these flowering trees. So it's not that it's still okay to do it in the winter, it's just you're sacrificing the flowers. It's still okay to do it now. Probably the worst time to really do a lot of pruning, as in taking off major branches, is right after they've fully leafed out. They're still at that point now where they're leafing out. And so it's fine. We'd probably rather do it when they're dormant. But it still would be fine. I mean, I assume you're not taking out. Usually what we say is don't take out more than a third of the tree at any one pruning. And I assume it sounds like you're just taking off a branch or two on most of these.
Yeah, probably. I mean, the dogwood may need a little more pruning than that. It's got a lot of dead wood on it, and it's very sort of twisted, like branches mm-hmm. are twisting back into the sort of main body.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get rid of those. And the magnolia, I was hoping to get a little better shape on it. I don't know too much about magnolia trees, but this one, it doesn't really have a trunk. It just sort mm-hmm. of has multiple trunks coming out from the base.
Mm-hmm. Is it a star magnolia, or do you know what it is?
It has white flowers.
Okay.
That's all I know.
And that's fine. And it could very well be a star magnolia, which tends to have more of a shrubby appearance. They don't have that typical sort of tree-looking appearance to them.
Okay.
So I think you're fine with all of them to go ahead and prune them now if you want to, because you've enjoyed the dog. I assume the dog was kind of on its way. I mean, a lot of them are in full flower right now, but once it's finished flowering, you can certainly go ahead and prune them. It's fine to prune dead stuff anytime. You know, anytime there's dead wood, I'd go ahead and get that out, but it's more obvious right now, obviously. And then probably what you'll notice with the birch, you certainly could go ahead and prune it now, but what you will notice with the birch, it will weep. You'll probably see a lot of sap coming out of the wounds on the birch, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but don't be alarmed if you start seeing that, because that's very typical them to get pruned this time of year. If they're pruned in the dormant season, you won't see that, which is often why you see, especially on birches and maples and stuff, not to prune them maybe in the springtime, because then you get that weeping, which doesn't really hurt the plant all that much, but it's just alarming sometimes.
I see. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Right, very good.
So
we'll do...
go for it.
I will.
All right.
Go forth and prune.
We'll do at least one more caller, and that's Bloomington, Illinois, on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello. I just heard the thing about Easter, and it reminded me of an Easter sermon I heard where the minister said that the true flower of the resurrection is the dandelion, because like the love of God, you cannot root it out. It always comes back.
That's putting a lovely spin on something that otherwise people don't really care for. Yeah. Mm.
But I just thought that was
Thanks.
Perfectly wonderful. And so your little girls are just spreading the love of God.
There you go. Yeah, it is one of those things. People, you know, I actually love them when they flower. I mean, that bright yellow flower, I just love it. I think it's so pretty.
Yeah, I do too. Of course, I'm a great fan of the book Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury, which has a similar kind of idea in it. Yeah. So
okay.
I had.
Thanks for sharing.
I had to share that. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Taking my call.
Thanks for the call.
Right.
I guess it doesn't, you know, I do see them around my yard, and I guess I don't get. Yes, I suppose if I'm in the mood, I might try to dig one up. Although also you got to kind of work at it to make sure you get the taproot out of there.
Yeah.
But I guess it really doesn't. It doesn't concern me. And maybe if I had thousands of them, that would be one thing.
Probably.
But one here and there, I figure, oh, what the heck?
Whatever.
Go ahead, do your thing. Be yellow. See what I care. Cell phone here, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
In my backyard, I have a lot of pine trees, and it has a huge collection of what do they call it, droppings or whatever. And I'd like to be able to plant a tree, an understory tree, and I was wondering if it's too acidic to plant like a dogwood or something.
Oh, with all the pine needles?
Yeah.
And stuff on there. Yeah, it's not so much acidic, despite what people kind of think about pine needles, they really don't change the pH all that much. But what you will notice underneath pine trees or spruce trees or any of the evergreens for the most part, it tends to be a very dry shade. And they tend to have roots that are very close to the surface, a lot of fibrous roots very close to the surface. So there's a lot of competition for moisture underneath those things. So it's not that it certainly can be done. I don't know if these have been limbed up to the point where you feel like you could put a tree or you must.
Over the last 15 years, the branches down below have died off.
Right.
So at some point, it's going to be way up there.
Which is fine. So you certainly can plant things under them. And actually, dogwoods, for the most part, would like acidic soil. I mean, they just as soon have it that way. But I think the one thing you will notice is that you're going to have to, especially as the plants get established, you're going to have to really pay attention to watering them. They're just going to probably take more water than you typically would think of with a new transplant. So I'd really watch the watering technique, but you certainly could plant them.
And do I need to dig an extra large hole before I put it in there?
Well, what you really want to do when you plant trees is that you really want it to be a wide hole. Think more like a saucer. So you really want it to be a nice wide hole as opposed to something that's really deep. So if you can make it a fairly wide hole, that's always good, like twice the width of the diameter of the root ball.
That wouldn't hurt the pine tree, would it?
No. I mean, especially with it sounds like these are particularly older trees, that's not going to be an issue. If you did it all the way around the tree, and then there might be an issue. But you're just talking about one spot, so they should be fine.
And I can still do it this spring?
Sure.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Right, sure.
Thanks.
Have fun.
Well, we are just about the point we need to finish up. Anything that going on, any events or anything like that you might want to mention?
We actually are at the point we're actually working to do these cocoa ross, or I call them rain spotters. And it's really a way to get involved with, we're talking about droughts and precipitation and stuff. It's really a way to get involved and to do some reporting of your own on what's going on in your own yard. And so we're doing some trainings coming up. We actually have one this Thursday in Champaign, so the 12th at 6:30. It's at their Champaign Extension office. And then next Thursday, we have one in Danville at the Extension office there. And then on the 26th, we have one that's actually in Onarga. So we have a number of those. So if people want to go to our website, they certainly can check those out. But it's just a great way to get involved and, you know, find out what's going on in your own backyard and what's going on with other people. It ends up being a collection of volunteers that do this precipitation data recording. And it really is interesting to see that, you know, a lot of times we know that somebody down the road gets more rain than we do, but this really sort of lays it all out.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign-Ford, Iroquois, Vermilion County. She's with us each month on a Tuesday. Thank you very much.
Thank you.